I'm Gab. He's Jules. Cloudy skies over West London, yes. But we have a packed show because there is major movement in La Liga as Atletico Madrid fall to Real Madrid. Jules, we have new league leaders in Serie A. I feel like I say that pretty regularly.
Yeah, Champions League draw coming up as well.
Champions League draw, if you care about that kind of stuff, which happens in March.
Of course.
Massive. All the big teams win in the Premier League, and a lot of penalties too. But let's start with the Madrid derby. Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. Sid, I think Real Madrid have now won, was it 9, 10 in a row in all competitions? But I want to start with the fact that they've won in different ways. And in this game, they've won by being lucky. They've won by being good. They've won by crushing the opposition. And in this one, they won, fair to say, by controlling the game and waiting for the stars to make the difference.
Yeah, and Ancelotti was very interesting about this. And I think one of the great things about Ancelotti is how calm he is about everything, but also how honest and how direct he is. There have been times in the past when I think if a Real Madrid manager said, to use this phrase that's becoming recurring now, we play in a low block and we play on the counter-attack because I want our forwards at the top of the pitch to have more space. And I think there have been times over the years when if a Real Madrid manager said that, he'd be slaughtered for it. Because it would be seen as a lack of ambition, because it would be seen as not being progressive. But Ancelotti is so kind of matter of fact about it that it's accepted. It's accepted that these are the qualities that we have. These are the things that make us most dangerous. And that's fine. And I think you're right. If you look at this run, it's a 14-day run that has basically won Real Madrid the league. Now, obviously, look, a long way to go and all that sort of stuff. The normal caveats apply. But they've beaten Athletic, Real Sociedad, Sevilla, Atletico. And, of course, in that run, they've also beaten Inter Milan the last 2 weeks. And when it's mattered, they've played the same starting 11 every time they've been able to. And they have won games in different ways, as you say. Occasionally fortunate, occasionally on the break, occasionally through control. And this game was kind of a combination of all of those things.
Jules, we talk about control. You talk about Modric and Toni Kroos in midfield. There's a whole issue with rotation, which we'll get into later with Sid. But Modric is 36 years old.
Incredible.
He's being chased by Atleti. Have this reputation being so physical, running around, running ragged, and they look like kids out there right now. Anyway,
it looked like. I mean, it's not. He looked. He just had a couple of seconds. It was a couple of seconds ahead of everybody. It's almost like he was seeing what would happen 2 seconds later before anyone else. And it was just brilliant to see him. I think in a setup like Sid and you explained that suits him. Far more than maybe a lot of running and a lot of intensity and going up and down all the time. I think this is perfect for him and for Toni Kroos to a certain extent, but certainly for Modric at his age and considering his game. I just thought it was magnificent. And I think when you play against him in that kind of form and Real Madrid have so much control, it's just very hard to regain that control.
Sid, I want you to help me understand Atleti a little better and Diego Simeone, because I'm a massive fan. I'm one of the people who drank the Kool-Aid and really believe that we're getting to Cholismo 2.0 because they have so many talented players and everything. And then I see this game and I see that even, you know, defensively, I couldn't quite work out what their setup was at the start of the game with Condogbia playing further back. I don't know if he was trying to be clever. It feels like nothing he tries works. And when they do get points, it's because of garra or grit or moments or individuals.
Right. Well, first of all, to answer the Condogbia question, he was playing at centre back basically because they've got injuries. Mm. There was no Savic, there was no Jimenez. They really didn't have a huge amount of choice but to play him there. Although, of course, they could have played with only two centre backs instead of three of them. It was actually a back four with Llorente at centre back and Hermoso at left back and Carrasco playing this hybrid role. But that's quite often the case with Atleti. It's not a clear cut formation. In terms of Simeone, I think there isn't a club, with the obvious exception of Barcelona, where there's an obsession about identity, where we've talked so much about identity or shifting identity or losing identity over the last 3 or 4 years as Atletico. And it's partly, as you say, because this idea that Simeone now has different types of players that has to play in a different way, but that maybe he doesn't fully believe in it, or maybe the players don't fully believe in some of the things that he says. But I think in a way, I think we allow ourselves to be dragged into that, perhaps more than is really the case, because, for example, this year, Atletico Madrid's problem isn't that they're... People keep saying they've got to be more expansive, they've got to attack more, they've got players to play differently. Well, their problem this year is that they haven't done the old things well. They're not defending well.
Yeah.
They're not protecting themselves well. They're not that team that they once were. There's a nice line by Iñaki Díaz-Guerra, who's an Atletico Madrid supporting columnist in El Mundo today. And he said, you know, what used to be a bulldog is now a caniche wearing Prada. And that's kind of part of the problem, that there's this sort of identity thing. And there's this sort of disconnect between what they were or what they thought they were and what they're becoming. And in a way, you can look at this year and possibly say, I mean, I think this might be stretching a little bit, but I think there's some merit in it. Say that Simeone has kind of become a victim of abundance, that it almost worked better when there was this kind of underdog idea, and that by bringing more players in, that's created a need to, if you like, shift the structure, try and find a place for Rodrigo de Paul, try and find a place for Antoine Griezmann, and that changes things. And it does feel like this is a team that hasn't yet worked out exactly what it wants to be.
This feels like that whole thing where, like, you know, the guy wins the lottery and then he thinks he's and then his life kind of falls to bits. Sid has told us that Real Madrid, with the caveats, have won the title.
Yeah.
It's early December. Are you ready to crown them, Jules?
Of course they are. No one will catch them now. No Atleti, no Barca, no Sevilla, no Betis. Why are you rolling your eyes? Who's going to catch them? Tell us.
Because it's early December.
Who's going to catch them?
I think there's a lot of different things that can happen. Yeah. You're sure they've won. Sid is covering his backside by throwing out the word caveat. All right, you ask who can win.
Yeah.
Sid,
don't give me Sevilla or Betis, okay? So.
No, I don't think Betis can win. But okay. Sid, is there any scenario where maybe everything clicks for Atleti? Maybe they...
They're 13 points behind.
13 points is 4 games. You have we've seen bigger collapses.
You've seen Real Madrid not playing great. We've seen Courtois being man of the match maybe how many times, Sid? So many times, because he saves them even when they don't play well to win matches. And I just don't know how they would lose that many games and that many points.
See, this is part of my thing. And I think, Sid, I can be accused of many things, but, you know, hating on Carlo Ancelotti generally isn't one of them, right? But you touched upon Courtois. And obviously Courtois is there and he's part of the team. I know there's people who provide advanced data and statistics on this about where they'd be with an average. You know, I think the term they use in U.S. analytics is wins over replacement or something. But should something happen to Courtois, for example, I feel like with an ordinary goalkeeper, they may have 5 or 6 fewer points this season. Even in this game, Courtois made the big save off Correa. Maybe
of his face as well, saved on.
You know, goals change games, right?
Yeah.
It felt like earlier this year there was a moment when it was Courtois and Vinicius carrying this team. How do we know they're not going to slip back to that, and then maybe you have an injury or whatever?
Well, look, I mean, the first thing is I don't actually think we gain anything by declaring the league over. And I don't think we gain anything by declaring the league not over.
Yeah, Jules, you tell him, Sid.
I think in a way, sort of racing to crown the champions is kind of pointless. Analysing the position we're in is a different one. And of course, they're in an exceptionally strong position. They're in an exceptionally strong position because the points margin is very significant. Because the teams that they have a lead over, and in particular, when you look at the lead over Barcelona, which is 18 points, and the lead over Atletico Madrid, which is 13, albeit with a game in hand, they're the teams that you could genuinely think they could go on a run of 10, 15 games picking up wins. And you look at Betis and Sevilla and Real Sociedad, if you like, who've really fallen away in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And they're just not teams that you think could even rack up sufficient points to catch Madrid, even if Madrid did have a wobble. Now, Sevilla are close enough that it's not implausible. Absolutely. It's 5 points if they win their game in hand. It's not implausible. But then you look at Madrid, and as you say, to kind of pick it up from where you are, I must admit, I look at Madrid and I think, well, one of the things that Ancelotti has done is Ancelotti said, I have a starting 11, and that starting 11 plays. And at some point, I might have to rotate. Yeah, but I'm not doing it now. And so, of course, we all have that question, which is what happens when they have to rotate? Because there isn't really a replacement for Courtois. There isn't really a replacement for Benzema. There isn't a replacement for Vinicius. And there isn't really a replacement for Modric. Although, so long as only one of the midfield three is absent. The problem with that is, of course, they go away and they lose Benzema, and Jovic goes and plays brilliantly and scores and provides an assist. But whenever you think that they haven't got strength in depth, someone comes in and performs. Now, there's no doubt that, if you like, the step down from that perfect 11 to the rest is very, very big. And Modric is 36. And however brilliant he is, he's 36. And you're going to get injuries at some point. But I actually think the strength in depth is, A, slightly stronger than people believe, and B, may not be needed as often. You know, again, there's no point in rushing to declare the title done. But I think Madrid are in a position from which, if they do not win the league, it would be a spectacular collapse. And I'll give you another example. When this has been happening, what, now that Madrid are in this position, and over the last two or three weeks, people have kept saying, yeah, but this is the position that Atletico Madrid were in last year. And in the end, they had to win the league on the final day. In the end, the league really was still open when we thought it wasn't, because they got to the halfway stage of the season with 50 points. And Real Madrid won't get to that, by the way, with 50 points. And you say, okay, yeah, all right, I accept that up to a point. But here's the thing. Atletico did win the league. And that cushion they'd got in the first part of the season ultimately was enough. Yes, it got very, very close, but ultimately it was enough to see them through. And also that was against teams like Madrid and Barcelona, who had the capacity to go on a run. And to be honest, you look at the other teams in the league right now, and the way that Atletico Madrid have doubts about their identity, the mess that Barcelona are in, I don't know about you, I just don't see how they go on that run. Madrid have won 10 in a row.
I agree.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Atletico have won 3 in a row this season.
I think I take what you say on board. I think what's interesting is the rotation and at what point we're going to see it. If there's one aspect to Ancelotti where, well, there's many aspects where he's kind of revised his views on football over the years, you know, from his starting point as like a little Sacchi clone back at Parma when he was super dogmatic to what he's become now. One, that area I think is physical fitness and preparation. There's really been an emphasis on that his son is obviously a big part of it as well. And what I've been told is, if Modric and Kroos are playing all these games now, it's because they can't. Doesn't mean that it's going to continue. And I think later on, if he feels that he needs to keep them fresh, perhaps with the Champions League, where I think we're all sleeping on Real Madrid all the time in the Champions League. I've said this all along. I think it's absurd. Like, I flick on the television, like, well, it's got to be an English club or Bayern because there's nobody else who can play football. You know, I'm like, no. Let's have a little bit of respect for people who've won this a couple times. Yeah, but so I definitely think that will come. I think one of the main things that he's emphasized is building the Militao Alaba partnership at the back. And Sid, if you could talk about that a little bit, because I think that's, you know, earlier in the season we saw them leak stupid goals through individual mistakes. With Ferland Mendy back in, with Dani Carvajal, who I think is another guy who often gets a little bit overlooked, back in. It's taken pressure off of Casemiro. He doesn't do stupid things and can focus on what he's good at. But those two have really grown. I mean, is this a top five? This is a top five centre-back pairing in Europe now, right?
I think it is. So. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of other centre-back pairings. I think that's definitely true. I think, by the way, you're right about Carvajal in terms of that little touch of nastiness, the athleticism, the intelligence, and, of course, the fact that it means you're just not playing a makeshift right-back, because whoever replaces Carvajal, it's not a right-back. Lucas Vazquez can do an all right job there, but he's not a right-back. Nacho can do a good job there, but he's a kind of a utility man defender. In terms of those two, I think obviously what's really interesting about those two is the fact that it's two new players. It's not just that this is, oh, is Alaba good? Is Militao good? We know they're both potentially good. We both know they both have skill sets that mean that they can be successful. And Militao, for example, who was a bit chaotic last year, that aggression and that speed, and I suppose in a way he's got the aggression of perhaps of a Ramos. He's got the recovery speed of Varane. And a lot of what Varane did for many years, and I think people overlook this, was bail Ramos out. Varane spent a lot of his time at Real Madrid bailing Ramos out. For Ramos would go flying up the pitch to get something. The space opens up, and Varane's recovery speed across the back was fantastic. Alaba, I think, is taking on the more of a leadership role, and the kind of the understanding of the game and the quality of the game. And one of the things that really strikes me about Alaba is he does this thing that basketball players do. At the end of every play, there's a high five. There's this kind of sense of, yeah, well done, after every single play, after every move. And what's really important about those two, and this is what I was coming to, is it's not just about, is he good? Because to be perfectly honest, given their ages, Alaba is an upgrade on Sergio Ramos. Lots of Real Madrid fans won't thank us for saying that, but he is. The question was, can you build a new partnership? after 10 years of Ramos and Varane together. You're putting two new players in. It's not just are they good, it's are they good together. And I think that's what's really worked. And I love Ancelotti's thing that he's come up with this year, that he's repeated a lot, which is to talk about how he wants defenders to be pessimists. He doesn't want them thinking, hey, this is great, I can go up the pitch with the ball. He wants them to always be thinking about the worst case scenario. And I think they've started to do that in the last 7 or 8 weeks.
It's funny, when you mentioned Varane bailing out Sergio Ramos, I was thinking, bailing? Why does that name sound, that term sounds familiar in the context of Real Madrid, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe, I don't know, some ghost of the past. But anyway, let's move on from...
By the way, Gareth Bale...
Stop it. No. Let's not talk about that.
No. Just let me throw this one line in. This is a starting 11, which is absolutely clear-cut now. Well, 10 of the 11 are. The only position that's not 100% clear-cut in the starting 11 is the one that Gareth Bale could come back into.
Exactly.
Stop it. My man Asensio.
But that's the only option.
We got Asensio, and when Rodrigo needs to come in, he comes in. I don't want to hear about that.
Bale can come and bail out.
Yeah,
everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Bale's, hey. Jules, I know you're getting annoyed because you're getting grumpy because we haven't spoken enough about Benzema.
Kareem the Dream!
Thank you. And his finish.
Aww.
Can I just note, though, Vinicius, 2 assists, yes?
Yes, lovely.
Best player in Spain this season, Vinicius.
I'm still struck, though, by the... I don't think many people would dispute that. Maybe Courtois might, but...
Yeah,
but, of course, goalkeepers get no love, but... The Benzema finish, what struck me about this was, you rewatch it, all right, Vinicius puts it on the plate for him, the defender moves away from him because you expect him to take a touch or to go forward, and instead he contorts his body and he volleys it. That's technique.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that
he makes it look so easy.
He's at the start of the move as well. It's him on the halfway line who gets the ball, turns and gives it to Asensio, who then gives it to Vinicius, who crosses the ball. I love the fact that he slows down his running on purpose, because I think he knows I will have more space on the edge of the box than if I go into the 6-yard box where Condobia is going to be there and Llorente and Hermoso or whoever else. So he slows down on purpose. I think the line of four by Atleti just drops too much, and with that space, I think even he can still even take a touch and then finishes it. But the volley is so sweet. Considering he's 50% fit, plays, and I think knows from the beginning he's only going to play the first half. To score a goal like this is pretty special.
Yeah, I felt like on that occasion he also knew he was ready to react. In other words, if the defender had stepped to him, he would have run past him, and Vinicius would have had the foresight to put the ball deeper into the box rather than cutting it back. Yeah. And I just think that's...
Can I make a slight correction? A pedantic one, perhaps, but a slight correction. You've both said the defender moves away from him. I think the truth is the defenders, plural, move away from him. You have a situation in which there are 6 men in the box who play for Atletico Madrid and 1 who plays for Real Madrid. And all 6 of them are running towards their goalkeeper. And as you say, Benzema takes a pause and steps back out away from them. And they keep running. And there's no one sees him. I think the defending on that goal is awful. Really, really awful.
It is.
That's not
fair,
awful kind of thing that's an obvious thing where someone trips over the ball or gives it away or misses a tackle. But it's awful because they're all just running in the same direction. No one is aware of him. And then the thing that most struck me about the finish is live, it looked like he'd really thumped it. And then you watch the replay again and he doesn't thump it at all. He's very conscious of keep this down and keep this on target. It's guided. It's not thumped at all. Although, obviously, when Benzema guides the ball, he still catches it so cleanly that it still travels pretty quickly. But it's the calmness of it. It's the awareness that, okay, if I really swing at this, this goes in the stands. You just guide it down low. One other thing to add to that, the calmness. Vinicius. A year ago, Vinicius doesn't look up and clip the ball calmly onto Benzema's volley like that. A year ago, he smashes it.
Yeah. Do you remember when we had our top ESPN's like top 23 under 23?
Yeah, yeah.
Tor Christian Carlsen put like Vinicius at number 2 or something,
yeah.
And some people complained about the fact that he had him. Well, that Carlsen can see into the future.
Okay.
Shout out to Tor. I want to get to Atleti, but first I want to go back to something you said, which is Ancelotti speaking so matter of fact and so directly and bluntly and saying, I'm paraphrasing what you said earlier when you yourself were paraphrasing Ancelotti, well, we like to keep a low block so we have space for our strikers to run into on the counterattack. It's kind of anathema in northern in modern football. In modern football, you're supposed to be proactive. You're supposed to push up. You're supposed to congest the space. This is the same Ancelotti who told me a few years ago that, oh, the thing about Real Madrid is you can't just win. You have to win by playing well. You know, this is a place where you can be 4-0 up and get booed by your own fans at the Bernabeu. I said, can you? I know you love going off on cultural tangents, which I find fascinating. Can you explain this apparent disconnect, or is it not a contradiction at all?
I think it's not as much of a contradiction as it seems, in that there isn't a puritanical streak in that from Real Madrid. It's true that the fans want them to play well, but the conception of what playing well is different. So, for example, the idea that playing well is short passing, keeping possession, pressing high, all those kind of things, very, very ingrained at Barcelona, but it's not at Real Madrid. Playing well at Real Madrid can be the vertigo of a quick counter-attack. It can be the speed. It can be the aggressiveness. It can be being a bit more direct. So I don't think it matters like that. The other thing is to look at it in the context of where Ancelotti comes from. A team that didn't win the league last year, that got to the semi-final of the Champions League, it's true, but got to the semi-final of the Champions League with everyone thinking, wow, how did that happen? You know, they weren't always that good, even if they then turned it on in key games. And a team that felt like, at the start of the summer, this was likely to be a team in transition that hadn't got Mbappe. And there was kind of a feeling like this season was a season to get through until he turns up. And actually, here they are in a position where they are very, very likely to win the league.
Yeah. Right,
and they lost half of the defence as well. And
yes, exactly.
You know, it's remarkable.
I want to take it back to Atleti. We touched upon this before about sort of the evolution and whatnot. I'm just wondering, and I hate this notion that people say he doesn't know what his best 11 is. But I'm wondering, if everybody were fit, what does Cholo want to do with his frontman? Because on paper, you would think in terms of reputation, it's Suarez and Griezmann. But then you have João Félix in the mix. And then you have Correa, who pops up with important goals. Recently, when Suarez was out, and he actually played three strikers, and I thought that actually worked relatively well. I'm forgetting the game; it was a couple rounds ago.
Betis, I think. But played very well against Betis.
Can you address this a little bit? I mean, is it? And also, where does Lamar fit?
Yeah, he's played well at times.
I thought it was incredible that Lamar was left out the starting 11 last night, because he's been their most outstanding player probably this season. I think Simeone is. Genuinely, I don't think he knows exactly how to put all these pieces in together. When Simeone was trying to encourage Griezmann to come in the summer, one of the things he said to him was, look, with a forward line of you, João Félix and Luis Suarez, this is a really good team. You know, this is a team that can do something special. And yet, I don't think he truly believes in João Félix, and I think he's nervous about Suarez physically. We know that Suarez can't go long for you. We know that you can't plan a break. And Simeone also said something which I thought was surprisingly blunt and surprisingly honest in the pre-match press conference before this game. He was asked whether he preferred Suarez or Cunha up front. And the normal thing there is to fudge it a bit. So, you know, both play great players, different qualities. He said, well, it depends who you're playing with them. If you're playing, I can't remember which way around it was. I think he said, if you're playing Correa and Carrasco, then maybe Suarez. If you're playing Depaul and Lamar, then Cunha. And yet, of course, yesterday he played Carrasco and Correa, and he didn't start Suarez because Suarez has come from an injury, but he also had Depaul in there. And I genuinely think he's looking at this at the moment thinking, how do I put all these pieces together? And there is a difficulty which is beyond football, and that is, of course, the status of these players. And you've got Luis Suarez, who took you to a league title last year, scored 21 goals, was decisive all season long, and now, in truth, you look at him, you probably have really significant doubts because he's physically not as quick, because maybe last year was a one-off kind of partly powered by rejection at Barcelona. Can that really happen again? Personally, I don't think it can. You've also got another issue, which is you bring in Rodrigo de Paul, which basically means you don't have Marcos Llorente in the position in which he was the best player in Spain last year, or the best, one of the best two or three in Spain, at least. The only person, I think, apart from Messi, to be in double figures for goals and assists. And now you've got de Paul in there. So what do you do? Well, you go, tell you what, I'll put him at right wing back. But then you lose Trippier. Now, I'm not claiming that Trippier is the key to everything, much as I'd love to do the English thing and say it's all about Trippier. But actually, that little combination between Trippier and Llorente was really important last year. But some of the mechanics that made it all work last year simply aren't there yet, which isn't to say they can't be replaced by other ones, but there hasn't been a continuity yet. I also think there's been a slight attitude issue. And I think there's a lack of a sense of cause, there's a lack of, if you like, a kind of, what would you call it? I suppose, a drive born of a determination to, I don't know, to defeat the odds, whatever you want to call it, that maybe isn't there once you've won the league.
I mean, let's not forget they were lucky against Porto to even make it to the last 16 of the Champions League.
Oh, no question.
There's a really important point to make about Porto, by the way, and I'm glad you brought it up because I'd forgotten about it and you've reminded me. After the Porto game, all of the Atletico players were saying things like, we'd like to suffer a little bit less, but we got through. So we're really pleased, but we would quite like to not find it quite so difficult. And yet, that game was embraced as an idea of, this is what Atletico Madrid have to go back to being. Tough, aggressive, nasty. Cheaty at times if needs be. That sort of, all those hallmarks, which I actually think, by the way, are exaggerated and a bit of a cliche. But anyway, all those hallmarks of a Simeone side. And Correa even said after the game, this is how we have to play from now on. And to be honest with you, I think that's a really big mistake. Yes, maybe you have to have that spirit. Yes, maybe you have to have that touch of nastiness and that collective identity, because Simeone said very interestingly, I thought, this is a team that's really good when it's a team. And everyone goes in the same direction. I think that hinted at the fact that up until now he felt they hadn't. But in all honesty, if you think the way to be a really good team is to play the way you did against Porto, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because they didn't play well against Porto.
No.
They really didn't.
And also, I think there's a problem in first halves. I've told you that before. I think in the last three home games, they didn't have a shot on target in the first half. And then second half, they started playing. And it was exactly the same. I don't understand. You're watching them, it's like, okay, when do you start playing? There's the free kick from Griezmann yesterday, and that's it. And then second half, he makes a few changes. I think Joao Felix is such an incredible talent, but it's only when he wants to, and to be fair, he doesn't play much, but the ball for Cunha at the start of the second half, I think is just amazing.
I thought that would get you excited.
Yeah, but then they only start playing in the second half, and then they create chances, but nothing in the first half. And I'm like, why does it take them so long all the time? Porto was very similar, to be fair. Why does it take them so long all the time to get into matches, especially in big games?
I think there's no question that they were unlucky with a Champions League draw, but they were lucky with the way a lot of these games have panned out. I'm thinking also of the first leg against Milan as well, where we could end up having a completely different conversation.
Yeah,
Sid, I'm going to leave you with an uncomfortable question, which you can hide behind a no comment here. When I look at Atletico Madrid's signings, you mentioned Rodrigo de Paul. When he was at Udinese, he played in a certain position, which was much more, he had a lot of freedom to go forward all the time. Obviously, he's playing in midfield, and I'm sure he's multifaceted, he can do different things. Here, especially in those games when it's him and Koke sitting in front of the back four, this is not what he does, not what earned him the move, even though I understand he's been playing well because he's a good player. I look at the João Félix move. I look at the Mateus Cunha move. Atletico Madrid, I look even going back to Lemar. Where did he come from? Monaco.
Yeah.
I look at the people who did all those deals, the intermediaries, and it's all the same freaking people. And I'm wondering, does Atletico Madrid belong in the Valencia bucket from a few years ago, and anybody in the Monaco bucket? And people who understand will know what I'm talking about.
Well, I like the fact that you're being very direct and very coy at the same time.
Of course. Our lawyers are watching.
But the short answer is in terms of the relationship at the top of the club, absolutely, yes.
All right. That.
Yeah.
That about settles it. I wonder what Simeone would do if he had a club that was slightly different. I know he's paid a lot of money to be there.
Yeah.
He's given a lot of control over the actual team, and he's a god there. But I'm just wondering, if this club were run maybe along slightly different parameters, what they could achieve and where they could be.
And you can argue that this squad hasn't been built the way it should have been built. There's still a lot of unbalance in players, what they need, what they went for when they didn't really need them, etc.
I think in fairness, we probably should point out that in the summer, most of us, and I do include myself, looked at this squad and thought, wow, that's really, really strong. It's got balance now. It's got a bit of everything. It really is well constructed. Because, and again, I can't claim to have seen enough of Rodrigo de Paul in Italy. But I think he's played very, very well this year. In fact, he's been outstanding. And you look at him, and there's no doubt that you think he's a good signing this year. João Félix is a curious one. It does sometimes feel like he's the right player in the wrong club in terms of whether Simeone wants a player of that nature. But actually, he's not blameless himself, João Félix. There's no doubt that João Félix is partly to blame for, if you like, the disconnect between his talent and productivity.
Sid, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sid.
Pleasure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Madrid. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Liverpool beat Aston Villa as Steven Gerrard returns to Anfield. Jules, the difference was a Mo Salah penalty.
I was there, Gab. There was a bit of emotion, which was really nice when Stevie G like, walked onto the pitch and etc.
Looks up into the car. Sky.
It was nice. The game wasn't, though. Oh, my God. I mean, it was cold and windy and rainy and everything you want, okay. But it was a bad game. It was really bad game. I think Salah did the most of it, of the penalty to get it. He knew exactly what he was doing and it worked, and good on him and perfect. Of all the penalties that the big teams had last weekend, this is not the worst by far.
No, this is 100% the penalty.
Yeah.
It's... How did Oxlade-Chamberlain do in the false nine?
Not for him.
It's more of a diamond anyway, wasn't it?
Well, it was not very clear, and I think that was part of the problem. I don't think Liverpool had to play much better to win the game anyway. But is the best thing or worst, depending where you come from, is Emi Martinez, like, time-wasting masterclass / everything. It was unreal. I've rarely seen him at that kind of level, but, you know. Manchester City stay ahead of Liverpool, however, Gab, beating Wolves 1-0, and obviously two huge referee decisions in that game, Gab.
Yeah, I think Pep said, though, we were better with 11 men, we were better 11
v 10.
That's
not the point.
Yeah, but first of all, it's true to a point. I mean, you might have been better in the first half, but you created very few tangible chances relative to the second half. Raul Jimenez, I've never seen, I have seen dumber yellow cards, but he gets the first one, fine. It's 100%.
Yeah, but that's not a yellow card, the first one.
Why?
Because he hardly touches Rodri, who's in the middle of the pitch.
It's not from behind. It's a tactical foul. You've seen them given. But then the second one, the guy tells you, move away. And you keep standing around there. I feel bad for Raul Jimenez. I really like him. I think he knows.
Bad at all.
I think he knows you screwed up. Take it on the chin and move on. The penalty, though, I have a serious issue with this.
Yeah,
right? João Moutinho. No. Bernardo Silva puts in the cross. It hit João Moutinho in the armpit. You can see it, right? Okay, maybe Jonathan Moss can't because he's not a very good referee and because he's on site, he doesn't have a good angle. Whatever, right? But the VAR, and then they release a statement to PGMO, we didn't have a definitive picture. No, you did. Anybody who's watching the game, you can go on YouTube and find a definitive picture. Yeah. Again, this isn't going to have massive impact. City deserved to win anyway. They probably would have scored a different way at some point. But this is just bad officiating. Premier League deserves better.
So
Paris Saint-Germain beat Monaco as Kylian Mbappe bags two goals. Jules, would you rather talk about the performance or about the ugly, cheesy Ballon d'Or kits that they all wore?
Well, you celebrate your Ballon d'Or winning player.
So let Messi wear it. Everybody else wear normal kit.
I don't think you can have that. I think.
Oh, no, because this is the no fun French league where Donnarumma is not allowed to wear number 99.
Fun. This is fun. You've got the golden letters and name at the back, numbers, everything you want. It's lovely. I wish.
So Diallo gets to wear a Ballon d'Or kit.
Of course, Bernat as well. I just wish the performance from PSG had been as good as, as worthy as a Ballon d'Or winner, because, they were second best again. I have to be honest here. Monaco played really well, I thought, and created chances far more than PSG, who scored one penalty, one goal on the counter-attack after a mistake by Fofana, and Mbappe finished it well. But I don't know, Poch said he was very professional. I was like, okay, I don't want professional with this squad and this team and those players. I just still don't understand. But hey, they won again. They're even further up further clear at the top of the table. Good for them, but I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe Paris Saint-Germain will send us will send us the Ballon d'Or kit.
Oh, I would love that. Yes, please. Inter go top of Serie A with a 4-0 demolition of Cagliari, and Gab Lautaro Martinez could have had a hat-trick. He missed a penalty, and Alexis Sanchez scores a great goal. His first of the season as well. Just everything is going that way.
So Cagliari are terrible, they but are this bad. Could have easily finished 7 or 8 now because Alessio Cragno made some tremendous saves. They're doing
11
great.
11 saves he made, I think.
Yeah, look, I'm holding my hand up. I think they may be a better team this year than they were last year. Mm-hmm. Certainly a bit more multifaceted team, more creative team, and certainly more depth.
Yep.
Jules, it's the joys of live recording. I'm going to be straight up with our with our audience the way a lot of broadcasters aren't because they're deceptive in the mainstream media. No, which is this. We were going to tell you, we're going to bring you highlights of the Champions League draw.
Yes.
The draw did take place. It took place while we were recording. However, they done screwed up the draw, Jules. How is this possible?
The wrong board in the wrong pot. This is what happened. You know, you're supposed to have certain clubs that you can face or not face depending on your group or your country, etc., etc.
So, like, to remind people, you can't face clubs who are from your own league, and you can't face clubs again that you faced in the group stage. Now, they're supposed to put all the little balls into the right pots so to ensure that this doesn't happen. And what happened?
They drew Villarreal, so now it was down to who they're going to face. And then they put all the potential clubs in the same pot, except that Andrea Shavin drew Manchester United, who obviously should not have been there because they were in the same group stage as Villarreal.
I blame Arshavin's haircut.
Of course.
Clearly, the one he had for so many years.
Too long.
Which looked awful. No, but joking aside, they immediately realized their mistake. They pulled Manchester City out instead. That's who Manchester City were going to face. Now they're going to have to redo the draw. A bunch of clubs filed protests. Is it logical that they redo the draw?
Yeah, I think so. The whole draw completely, even if the Benfica Real Madrid was the first tie out, was not impacted by it. I think they have to redo it again. They should not even have continued once the Manchester United Villarreal mistake was made. But they went all the way in. We all reacted to what the first draw, and then it will very likely be completely different now.
Unbelievable stuff. So we're going to have to wait around and see what that draw brings. All right, let's roll with more quick hits. Barcelona are held 2-2 by Osasuna. Jules, Xavi's experimenting with new formations. We got to see Samuel Umtiti and Luke de Jong again.
God, yeah. I mean, Umtiti, I was happy. De Jong, not so much, you know. Lots of injuries, of course, so you have to try different things. We saw Ousmane Dembele as a wing-back. We saw a lot of things that didn't really go well, or certainly not according to plan. They took the lead twice. They get picked back.
Jimmy Avila, though.
I know, but you can't concede goals on set pieces like this when you're in a situation where you are in. They're supposed to be the easiest way of defending. Come on.
Xavi said he saw some good things.
No, there were a few good things, but still, it's still not good enough. A last gap penalty converted by Jorginho gives Chelsea a 3-2 win, Gab, at home against Leeds. This was big, and they had to stay in touch with all the other big ones, that the big teams that won, but that was not pretty.
It wasn't pretty. It was interesting because remember he like played all the scrubs against Zani in the Champions League, focusing on this.
Yeah.
And now all the supposed regulars come back because Lukaku's still not in there. And what happens and Leeds still, you know, for long stretches take him to the sword. I think there's no chemistry at the top, and it's not entirely his fault. That's not helping. Jorginho, cool as ice once again. I told you, the hop is back.
Yeah, the
penalty's back. Exactly. By the way, big shout out to Rudiger who won both penalties.
Oh my God.
Manchester United went away to Norwich 1-0 thanks to penalty won and converted by Cristiano. Who else? And some big saves from David De Gea. Jules, Ralf Rangnick says they need to do more. Yeah. A lot more,
guy. If you look at the way they played and they pressed and the running, all the attitude that we thought he was going to sort out quite quickly is still not really much.
It's hard to learn this system. It's difficult to learn.
And they don't have the time. They don't have the time to work on it anywhere. They played a lot of games, even if he rotates. We saw that in the Champions League. But it's just not easy. So, yeah, a lot more needed there, for sure. Paulo Dybala gets injured straight away. Juventus are held 1-1 away at Venezia, and it's their worst tie in 23 years, Gab. Another bad day at the office for Allegri.
Yeah, a bad day at the office, and what's really concerning me, like, forget the injuries. And by the way, Venezia did not play particularly well in this game at all. is Allegri comes out afterwards and says, oh, well, we didn't do a good job at managing the lead once we took the lead, because he took the lead after half an hour with Morata. And I'm like, okay, but the Venezia equalized in like minute 55. You had another 35 minutes afterwards where it was a draw.
You had more time knowing the lead than in the lead almost.
Exactly. Exactly. You had 23 minutes when you were in the lead. What about the other stuff? Yeah. We need to see more. And it seems like it seems like they keep dropping points in stupid situations, just not playing well. Bayern stay top in the Bundesliga, but Jules, they had to come from behind against Mainz.
Yeah, which was quite a big shock, a big surprise. I don't think they played well.
No.
Musiala and I think Kingsley Coman is actually doing great things for them at the moment, but
Tolisso less so.
Although it's a good ball on the first goal, but I just think that it was maybe the time where they could drop points and Dortmund could win and come back a little bit, and yet in the end it's Dortmund who dropped more points and them who won and are going to be cruising.
Without Kimmich and Goretzka, this is a different team.
It's a very different team, completely. And speaking of Joshua Kimmich, Gab, he's let everybody know that he will now get vaccinated. Better late than ever, I guess.
I want to be consistent on this. I said it's his choice. He's got to face the consequences. At least he is facing the consequences. And maybe that if this helps other people do what I think is right for me, then more power to him.
Yeah.
Arsenal beat up Southampton 3-0, which is good. Yes. But on the flip side, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang left out entirely for what Mikel Arteta says are disciplinary reasons. Not the first time this has happened this season.
Remember,
Jules.
It happened before the derby last season against Spurs. Happened this time, which he was late for training the day before the game. And this is you know how I mean you disagree a bit with we disagree here you and you with Arteta. I think Arteta did the right thing. The only thing he could do, you have to show, you know, lead by example as a manager. And there's rules. He didn't respect the rules.
Arteta, I've got no problem with what Arteta's doing. He's applying the rules. You know my initial disagreement. All the abuse I got for putting all this, giving all this money to this guy.
It's very disappointing
after he turned 30. And I think best. Move on with Adam. Sign a striker in January and move on.
Yeah. He takes a stunning goal from Zlatan Ibrahimovic deep in injury time for Milan to avoid defeat at Udinese. Gab, they've lost top spot now.
Yeah, and they've been trending poorly. I mean, other than that big win against Atletico, I think since Halloween, the only other teams they beat were like Salernitana and Genoa, who are both terrible. Shout out to Zlatan.
Of course.
It was a gorgeous goal. Hey, 40 years old, that kind of flexibility. Yeah. Very zen of him.
Yeah.
They need to do better. They're lacking intensity. It's not just all down to the people who are out. They need to take a long, hard look at where they are and how they're doing things. But things will improve, I think, when Rafael Leao and Ante Rebic return. Tottenham's match against Brighton was called off this weekend, just as their game against Rennes in the Conference League was called off on Thursday. Jules, UEFA say they can't agree on a replay date for the Rennes game, and the case has been referred to the disciplinary committee. To me, this is all pointing in one direction, which is Tottenham getting kicked out of the competition, awarded a 3-0 home defeat.
They can't qualify anyway. So now that Vitesse won their game, so it's a game that Rennes are sure to be top. Spurs can't finish higher than third where they are now, so why playing the game?
So Spurs forfeit the game.
Yeah, basically. And you know, I think, yeah, you would have got a bit of money if you'd won the game. This is how the prize money works in European competitions, but I don't think either team will care too much. More woe for Napoli as they lose at home to Empoli, Gab, and slip to fourth now. Are the wheels turning off?
No, I think it's mostly just injuries. They lost Zielinski as well. Look,
really,
this was a big blow and psychologically, but they did hit the woodwork twice.
Yeah.
They created the goal they grew up was a bit of a screwy goal from Empoli. Patrick Cutrone, by the way.
Empoli are a good team, by the way.
Empoli are a good side. Yeah, I know. But it's a tough moment with the guys they have out. They just need to buckle down. Statement win for Betis, who beat up Real Sociedad 4-0 to keep their stranglehold on third place. Jules, it's four wins in a row for our boy Manuel Pellegrini.
Yeah, and Nabil Fekir, who came back into the team, scored a lovely goal, by the way, the third one. I mean, I still don't know what the Real Sociedad keeper was doing on the first goal. And
Ramiro, when he was doing the wander out.
By the way, Ramiro caused them, remember, the win in the derby against Athletic Bilbao. And now costing them big again.
He was celebrating his 100th appearance for the club. That's what he was doing.
So
not a good way to celebrate.
Okay, not good at all. Sticking with Betis, Gab, what's up with all the stuffed animal being thrown onto the pitch?
Okay, so if you haven't seen this, I think this is sweet. It's the holiday season.
Yes, they do that.
They celebrate, right? They call it the reign of the stuffedies. I don't know if they do it every game. Then somebody goes and collects them, and they go and I guess they give these stuffed animals to charity.
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
I'm going to be like Mr. Safety.
What would you throw on the pitch?
Well, I love stuffed animals. When I was little, I grew up, I had a favorite. I had a penguin I slept with, and I accidentally burned the penguin and moved on to a dog. But aren't there sanitary issues? I mean, first of all, you don't know where these things have been.
And it doesn't matter. That's not the idea. You sanitize them before you give them to charity.
What do you mean? How do you sanitize them?
I don't know. You spray them and also.
And then they go on the pitch and it's muddy. It's a nice idea. It's the thought that counts. Meanwhile, crosstown rival Sevilla stay second thanks to a great goal from our buddy Thomas Delaney.
What a goal. I didn't expect him to even try that, you know, but cut across and then on his left foot in the top corner. Amazing. They didn't play well.
No, I don't think they played well at all.
It's one of those wins that you're happy to get, but you think like, okay, just forget about this one. We got the 3 points. That's the biggest thing of the day. And then we move on to the next one. They've played a lot of games. They've had the disappointment, of course, in the Champions League. So it was good for them to finish the week with that win. Borussia Dortmund, not so good. Are held away to Bochum, Gab, as they let Julian Brandt's goal is disallowed. Brandt, who's already equalized quite late. This is a big missed opportunity, isn't it?
It was. I think it was Marius Wolf, actually, equalizer. It was from one perspective because Bayern keep winning.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Bochum are really good. I actually went, look, Bochum have lost. No, they're really good at home. Bochum have lost at home in the last 9 months. I mean, it is a big ask to expect them to come back.
I remember, look at the goal they scored. I mean, the defending again from Dortmund. I was like, oh my God.
Gregor Kobel's been wonderful, and he's really saved Not on this day.
Not on this one.
Look, they're imperfect. They're up against Bayern, who are just a juggernaut, who play badly and win.
Yeah.
I think it is what it is right now for Dortmund.
Yep.
Domenico Tedesco, whose name, and I never cease to find this funny, his name literally means German, but he's actually born in Italy. Love it. Makes his debut on the Leipzig bench, and they roll to a 4-1 win over Borussia Mönchengladbach, who have now conceded 14 goals in the last three Bundesliga games. Jules?
I mean, Gladbach, I don't know what's going on there, but we've said, remember, after the 6-1 defeat the weekend before, how psychologically it could be very hard for them to even just regroup. Well, I think this game showed, because they were just all over the place from start to finish.
Yeah, and for Leipzig, they're not having a good time.
No, not having a good time. And for Leipzig, I guess you play a team like just conceded 6 and lost 6-1. You know, you go for them, and I thought they started so well with that intensity. I'm not sure how it's down to Tedesco, that, and the star and everything, of course, because he's just arrived. But what a great win for him. You believe in him more than I do, so let's see. But what a way to start. Atalanta shake off disappointment of the Champions League exit and the defeat against Villarreal by beating Verona 2-1. Gab, they're third now. Can they stay there or can they move higher up even?
So first of all, shout out to El Cholito, Giovanni Simeone, who did score for Verona in this 12 league goals.
Every time he plays a big team, he scores.
Recently, every time he plays, he scores. I think this is really important that, you know, and I think this is the mindset you have to have, right? Mm-hmm. It was so disappointing against Villarreal.
What happened, do you think, against Villarreal?
I think they made individual mistakes. You know, they play with this confidence that is what makes them great, but equally the players are what they are. And if you're Unai Emery, you can go and you can pick them off. In this game, they were more conservative against Verona, and I think this is one thing we've seen from Gasperini. Maybe we should have seen more of it against Villarreal, where they adjust a little more to the opposition. Verona played a million miles an hour. If Verona, they knew that if they went into this game and they said, we're just going to match Verona for running and for intensity and whatever else. So they were a little more conservative. You know, they kept a lot of the guys out who had started. So Miranchuk, I didn't even know he was still at Atalanta. I didn't know he was there, but, you know, he scored. And they got it done. And maybe this is what they need to compete. Yeah, I think they can definitely. They can definitely not just stay top four. I think they can challenge for the title.
Yeah.
RMC in France are reporting that Anthony Martial, or Tony Marshall as he's known in England, could leave Manchester United as early as January. What?
Yes.
Jules, what do you think? He's been linked to Lyon, but that would mean Peter Boss. So.
Yeah.
It makes more sense for him to wait for Paris Saint-Germain in the summer and replace Kylian, no?
I think, considering he's a Paris-born and bred kid, I think PSG would be very appealing to him and to the whole family, his wife, etc. Lyon, I don't believe it. They can't pay his salary anyway.
We can take a pay cut in exchange for more years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm sad in a way. I can understand why they want to move, because he's not playing. I think it's 2 starts this season, 1 goal, 7 appearances only. It's like, it's not good enough. His agent is working on a move. I think the club would be happy for him to move. I would have liked him to succeed at United. And I think he showed that glimpse, the talent that he had and how much he could bring to a team, the versatility, even play wide, play central, second striker. There's a lot of things that he's very good at, but we haven't seen enough of it. And I think it's a real shame.
The only reason this would surprise me a little bit, and if I were him, I would wait for the summer as well, is you've got a new manager. He's playing 4-2-2-2-2. So you've got two people up top. One of them obviously is Cristiano. The other one is Marcus Rashford. And you've got Mason Greenwood. But if you're going to play two strikers, you need... You need probably at least 4 people on your books. You've got Edinson Cavani there too, but of course he's older, he's got injuries, he's not necessarily a pressing machine at this stage. Okay, but Martial's young, he's got legs, he can learn.
I know.
Add a dimension to your game.
United might not let him go in January, and they might say, listen, we need you to go in the summer.
Yeah, even to be number five.
Yeah, of course. But for him, with the World Cup so close after the start of next season, you can't afford to be on the bench the whole from January to May and then only move in the summer. So I can see from his point of view why he would want to leave as early as possible, basically. Fiorentina destroys Salernitana 4-0 as Dusan Vlahovic scores another 2 goals. Gav is out of contract in June 2023, in 18 months. And do they have to sell him in January, considering he's not going to renew? Or would you keep him at least until the summer?
So this is the gamble, right? This is what you have to evaluate if you're Fiorentina. I think it's a wonderful case of opportunity cost, right? So if you keep him in January and you say, you know what, let's take a run at the Champions League. They're in fifth place.
Yeah.
They can get into the Champions League. With him, you're going Champions League. It means you probably sell him for less money because you only have a year left on his contract. Yeah. So it's not going to be 60 or 70 million. It might be 40 million. But you're in the Champions League, so you've made this extra money.
Yeah.
To me, selling him now, maybe you can get 70, 80 million guaranteed, possibly. Although, given how much money his agents want from whoever the buying club is, that's going to impact his transfer fee as well. But you don't have him. And keeping until the end of the season, if I'm Vlahovic, I'll be super motivated to keep playing hard, right, for my next club. I don't know. I would lean towards keeping him. It is a gamble. But then again, that's why you got a billionaire owner, like Rob, like Mr. Rocco, right?
Yeah, exactly. Completely.
After winning their group in the Champions League, Lille hosted Lyon. It finished scoreless. But Jules, do I sense more misery for Peter Boss?
I mean,
for second Peter Boss reference of the show.
Yeah, it is, which is a lot coming from you. Thankfully for them, they had Anthony Lopez in goal, because he was magnificent once again. I mean, he saved them so many times. We talked earlier about De Gea and Courtois and all of that. I mean, he has been magnificent. And without him, they would not be 12th. They probably would be even lower. So more pressure on Boss. They was not good enough with the ball. They missed. Paqueta was suspended. Took a combi. Was a bit injured. So there was a lot of things going on for Lyon. But still, it was just not good enough, you know?
Hey, remind me about Lyon's director of football and how he could possibly think that, given the way Peter Boss plays, like,
I know
Paqueta is the right guy to... I know he's been playing well.
Yeah, it's been great. I don't know. It's Juninho, who, by the way, is going to leave in January because he's had enough of the whole politics at the club. I think he's had enough of Peter Bosch, of Jean-Michel Aulas, of Paqueta, of everybody. And he wants a holiday, and good on him. But, yeah, there's something clearly not right in there. Celebration in Firth as Grote win the first game of the season, Gab. 1-0 over Union Berlin. Time to troll our producer, Freddy, and say well done to Grote. I mean, they had, 15 defeats in a row or something?
It's something. They had 1 point going into this game.
Back in August.
Back in August. I mean, it's
crazy.
Mad. Our producer, Freddy, of course, a big Union Berlin fan. Yeah, big Reading fan as well, so tough times for him.
Yeah, definitely.
New York City FC are champions of MLS.
Yes.
Jules, they thought they had it all won in regular time, but then they had to do it all over again from the penalty kicks. Because big equalizer in, what, the 4th minute?
Yeah, 94, the Timbers. And then City, who played well in that game. And I thought, okay, there's just one winner now. And it's not going to be City. But they hold on, and then penalties. And then maybe the footage of the whole night, he's Ronnie Dalia, the coach, the former Celtic Glasgow coach, stripping off to his pants and doing press-ups on the pitch with all the players and all the families and the fans in front of him. It was also a game that was marred by a fan throwing plastic glass onto the City players after they scored a goal, which in France, I'm telling you right now, the game would have been abandoned. In a way, it was something that we should not be seeing. This game was not abandoned. It went all the way and City won. But again, this is not acceptable. And the guy was arrested in Chokta and will never appear in a football stadium before again, but still not good enough.
It is interesting because, I mean, in Europe anyway, if a fan throws something and it hits a player, in a UEFA competition, it's pretty much automatic. You forfeit the game. Or certainly has been in the past. Here, maybe it's the final, whatever. It's almost like, all right, we'll go, we'll find the individual, we'll punish him, but let's continue with the game. Nobody got seriously hurt. Let's continue with the game. I kind of like the MLS approach more. If it doesn't have an impact, if it's not going to lead to more violence, to make that call.
Sergi Canos and Brentford, the game at Leeds, I think it was 10 days ago or last weekend, where he scored, got hit by something on his lip and then kept playing.
I remember many, many years ago, our friend Jamie Carragher getting hit by a coin in a game. I forget what the game was, but he was playing for Liverpool. I don't think he ever played for anybody else. He gets hit by the coin and looks at the coin and he throws it back into the crowd. I love that.
Samuel Eto'o has been elected president of the Cameroon FA. Gab, he has plenty on his plate.
Certainly does. Obviously, Cameroon hosting the Africa Cup of Nations. There's other issues. There's some political issues in Cameroon as well. Listen, we all talk about how great it is when, you know, real football people get to run federations. I can tell you what, having watched this for a long time, sometimes it's really good. Sometimes it's really bad because it is a different skill set. These are political positions. Your fame only takes you so far. What I can do is Samuel Eto'o is one of my favorite footballers. I had the privilege to meet him several times. He's a very clever guy. And I just wish him and Cameroonian football the best. Jules, remember last show we told you about the fool who walked on the pitch during the Chelsea-Juventus Women's Champions League game and eventually got body checked by Sam Kerr because security were busy standing around eating donuts?
Yeah. Well, apparently, you know what? He can't be prosecuted, Gab.
What?
Because this was not a designated match, which means that in the...
Is it the 1991 football offences match?
Law?
Some other stupid arcane law that they have in
Clearly,
this country?
Women's football is not recognised as a serious sport and that their top flight doesn't have the same rights as the men's top flight or even league matches.
Like so, weirdly, Sam Kerr could get prosecuted for assault.
So he could sue her...
All right. It's unbelievable. Again, my problem with lawyers. I told you.
Yeah. Diego Maradona's daughter, Dalma, one of his daughters, will be at the stadium named for her father tonight in Naples to film a documentary. But Gab, there's a little snag though because the club not too happy.
This is really unbecoming here. So what's happening is Dalma, who's an actress and a poet and whatever else, she's making a documentary and she does a big monologue about fatherhood and how she knew Diego and blah, blah, blah. And whatever, that's great. She's making a film, but it's a film for commercial purposes. And Napoli are doing their own. It's apparently a 30-part series on the history of the club. Given it's Napoli, you presume, you know, 31 of those 30 episodes will be devoted to Diego Armando Maradona. They said, no, well, you can't film here at the stadium. But then Napoli don't own the stadium, but they're renting the stadium. So there's this bizarro situation where the city of Naples has said, sure, Dalma, you can go ahead. We own the stadium. So she can film at the stadium. She can film on the running track inside the stadium. She cannot film in the dressing room because Napoli refurbished it, and that's part of their deal with renting the stadium. She can't go onto the pitch because Napoli control the pitch. She can't go in the area where her father's statue is because Napoli control that area as well. The whole thing is really unbecoming and a mess. It's all about money, which is really quite sad.
It's really sad.
Diego deserves a little better. Come on, guys. Sort it out. All right, Jules. That brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Thursday.
Yeah, more games in
midweek. Midweek football. Oh, the fun never stops. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad. What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.